Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome, people, to another edition of the Michigan Football Breakdown Preview Style as we look ahead to this Fiesta Bowl matchup, Michigan-TCU. And you know the key has been hard at work. The key has been unlocking the TCU defense for weeks, not days. Not days, people. Weeks the key has been at work. I mean, you were that kid that did extra credit in school, weren't you, Al?
Yeah, I kind of was, Sam. Yeah, if I liked the subject, I did. Now, I didn't spend a lot of time on science, but some of the other subjects, yeah, heck yeah.
Yeah, every game, the key has unpacked what TC brought to the table or brings to the table. We're going to debunk some myths out there that you hear from national pundits. Hell, you're even hearing it from TCU. You know what? We stopped Bijan Robinson. We stopped the Texas rushing attack. That's a good indicator of how Michigan is going to come. No, it's not. Al Borch is all about it coming up. Before we get into it, I'm going to get your questions on because I know you got all kinds of questions for the key. Want to remind you, if you like this broadcast, if you like this program, be sure to like the video. Be sure to subscribe to the channel. Then go tell all your Wolverine friends about it. Hell, you Buckeyes. Hey, Buckeyes, I've been helping y'all out, right? To help y'all out. Tell all your friends about it.
Buckeyes can come. Yeah.
I'll give you a couple tips on how to beat Georgia or how to not get blown out by Georgia. How about that? Come on by. We'll help you out. Right? Of course, if you're listening to this on the podcast channel, be sure to like and subscribe over there. Tell all your friends about it. They can get it wherever they find their podcast. Google, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, you name it. And of course, where it all goes down. The way you can really, truly show your love is go over to the MichiganInsider.com. Subscribe right now. While the special is still going on, 50% off an annual subscription available even to you monthly subscribers out there that have been kind of waiting on the fence, trying to figure out whether you want to take the full plunge and be an annual subscriber. Do it right now for 50% off. Only a limited time left. So take advantage of that deal over at the MichiganInsider.com. With that gorgeous Borges, first of all, man, Merry Christmas. New Year is right around the corner, and you're getting your fill of Michigan football, all this film that you broke down. Give me your broad strokes, first, of the TCU defense, and then second, of how you think Michigan matches up with the TCU defense.
Okay, TCU defense is kind of built for the conference that they play in. The conference that they play in features probably about 90%+ of the teams run spread concepts virtually every down. I mean, they're going to be in 10 personnel, four wide receivers, three wide receivers with a split tight end, empty backfield. So their defense is kind of geared to that, which is smart. That's really probably the way they should play. They play with a three-man line. Almost 100% of the time. And they play with a five across on the back end. So it's a 3-3, which is 6, and 5, which is 11, right? Those five DBs will rotate up in cover 2 and allow that middle safety to either sink into the box and play the run, number 28. You'll see a bunch of him, right? Or they may rotate the inside safeties down and let number 28 play deep third. All the blitzing, Sam, is done by the linebackers, the three linebackers, number 6, number 57, and number, I'm not drawing it up right now. Maybe it's 19. I can't remember. But the three linebackers are the three dudes that put the pressure on the quarterback. They will offset to the strong side in a 3-4 look. Offset to the weak side in a 3-4 look, and they'll rotate a safety down behind or away from the way that they overshift. Okay? They will oftentimes take one of those three down linemen and bump him inside to what we call a 4-I. We've talked about this position all season, right? A 4-I is a defensive end who plays in an inside position on your tackle. And they will do that usually away from the tight end side or the multiple receiver side, if there's three receivers, okay? That is their setup. Number 28 is kind of the key to their whole deal. He is going to be a hybrid type player. Play deep third, play in the box as a linebacker type, or cover man to man. They will pressure, they will send three guys a lot of the time when they pressure. As I said, it'll be with linebackers with scrape dogs and guys coming through the middle and things like that. But you basically always know who the guys are that are blitzing. But it is very, very good at handling wide receivers, a lot of wide receivers, okay? And not bad at handling split zones and things up front where the configuration of their defense challenges the offense to block all their bodies. What don't they see, Sam? What don't they see? They don't see a lot of heavy groups. Now, they do get some. Baylor did some. Kansas State did a little bit. Texas tried some. But, Sam, there's two to three duo plays out of these groups. They don't see 14. Okay, so they're going to have to – their challenge to me is tailoring that defense to dealing with having to defend multiple gaps. By multiple gaps, I mean bunch formations with three tight ends, wing formations with two tight ends, double wing formations with sometimes four tight ends. This is all the things that Michigan brings to the table, and coupled with the ability to occasionally spread you sideline to sideline, because they also have that in their toolbox too. Michigan is not restricted to condensed formations. They can use their wide receiver formations just as easily and still present a great threat to run the football. So, I hope that encapsulated itself. That's as good as I can do.
All right, so let's talk about their 4-I. This is an important position to really talk about because it's been exploited. You might recall me talking about how watching the Big 12 championship game, I'm live doing our live broadcast down in Indianapolis, and Vance is texting me like you. I brought Vance to the table because this was my routine before they were on these programs. Before Vance and Al were on these programs, I'm texting with them during the games, right? So you're getting what I was getting for years during games. So Vance was texting me saying, Sam, they don't have an edge on their defense. Sam, they don't have an edge on their defense. And if you go through the film, Al, they're pinning that guy. They're pinning that 4-I time. So that's the strategy. And to be frank, it's kind of how TCU went. They're spilling everything anyway to number 28. Number 28 is their cleanup man, right?
So hard to block. Yeah, hard to block.
On one hand, it feels like the offenses have found something. On the other hand, it feels like that's kind of what TCU is directing you to do. But it's been more problematic toward the end of the season. More problematic versus Baylor. More problematic versus Kansas State in the Big 12 championship game. And it really feels like to me, you tell me if I'm wrong, you're the OC, feels like something Michigan can really exploit.
Well, it's in their wheelhouse, number one. It's where they're a little more vulnerable is really kind of what Michigan does well. And that's attack the off-tackle gap, attack the outside with pin and pulls. They allow what we did, so we don't sound like we're coming out of left field with this stuff. Went through every single game they played and cherry-picked plays that they showed vulnerabilities to. And the same ones showed up. Mm-hmm. The same play. It didn't matter who the opponent was. The counter OT play was a good play against TCU, particularly in certain formations. If you looked at the now the duo play, it shows up, but because this conference is not a multiple tight end conference, you're not going to see that play as much. That's the good news, but that's the bad news because now they've got to deal with what could be 12 to 15 duo plays that they don't see every single week in a defense that does seem soft on the edges structurally, okay? And the other thing you see a lot are pin and pulls. Now, you see the conventional pin and pulls with the tight end blocking down and, you know, certain guys pulling based on what the front is and all that. But you see a different pin and pull with these guys a lot of times because they will align their defensive end in that four-eye position on the weak side. You will see open side pin and pulls, which Michigan does not run, but stay tuned on that one, okay? They will actually pin that four and pull either both guards, a guard and an H-back, or both guards will actually U-turn off a counteraction, and they'll pin that four and run the ball around the edge. Now, a couple teams did that. I call it a U-turn horn play. It was run from Baylor and Kansas State. I think they stole the play once they saw how much success they had on it. But that was a play that showed up quite a bit. Your basic wing horns, where we call I call them quad horns, because you got one more gap they got to defend. That showed up a couple times. Baylor, who was successful running, probably more successful running the ball on him than anybody was, they showed that play. The base horn play was run, I believe, by Oklahoma State. They ran it. It looked good. And a play that that Michigan has, but doesn't feature as much in their run repertoire, is a stretch play. But the stretch play against Baylor was money. They ran that play, and they struggled stopping it. So there are some things that look vulnerable that Michigan does well. And I'm sure, at least in part, some of these things we're talking about are going to be heavily featured in the game plan.
So a couple of things kind of stand out to me. Number one, you talk about the – what did you call it? The U-turn play.
The U-turn play, yeah.
It takes advantage of a fast-flowing defense, of a triggering defense. A U-turn horn play or pin and pull. Al calls pin and pulls horn play. So
horn just, plays, yeah. So just a quicker way to say it, Sam. It's just a quicker way to say it.
It's not in Michigan's playbook, at least as far as we know. We haven't seen Michigan do that. But we did see them do a U-turn counter.
Yes.
Remember that? For much the same reason. I talked about this when we were on with Vance. You remember we were talking about the Iowa game and – I was reflecting upon the Big Ten championship game and said, Iowa triggers hard on counters. They're blowing the hell out of the counter in that game. Gattis was able to get him later in the contest. I think he might have RPO'd it or something. I can't remember. Or maybe it was a flea flicker. I can't remember what
flea
it was.
Flicker. Yeah, it was a flea flicker. Yeah.
Right. So he set it up. Michigan coming off of that, you had to know Iowa is going to trigger hard on the counter. Al, it was the first freaking series. They gave him a counter look. You turn the pullers, and it's a convoy to the end zone. Ronnie Bell doesn't even get touched. It's going to be an arsenal, man. If I know Sharone, and I know Sharone, it's going to be an arsenal, man, especially with how successful it was for Baylor. Like, you steal things. This is the important thing for you as a play caller. I need you to talk us through. Steal things that are in your DNA. Because you remember you said –
Ohio State's
not going to do what Illinois did, and they tried it, and they got the hell beat out of them.
Yeah, the hell. Yeah, you can't depart from your culture and make your kids uncomfortable when you've won 13 games doing something one way. Now, that being said, is it really that far from your culture? So if you take something and completely bastardize it, and nobody's ever done it before, your odds of success against a good opponent like TCU probably aren't very good. But if it's in your culture, if you're used to pin and pulling, if that's something that you do, maybe there's just a little nuance as to which way you want to run it. But all the rules for the back's the same. The other rules for the line is the same. And you've got, what, three? How long have they had? 3 to 4 weeks to prepare and practice these things? As long as you don't have 10 of those things, and maybe you just have a couple, two or three that add nuance to your attack, I think they're very doable. Every team in the country does that. I mean, they will take plays that the opponent has not seen them run on tape, and based on the vulnerability of what they saw in other games, add those plays to the offense. Sometimes they hit, sometimes they don't. But when they do hit, they usually hit big because they have shown vulnerability to that play. Now, you got to decide, Sam, this is the question, the magic question. How much of that do you want to do? Because we know damn well we're running dual plays, right? We know damn well we're running counter plays. That discussion is rubber stamped, okay? We know we're probably running base horn plays, right? Probably. Certain games more than others, right? Now, how much of our time are we going to spend on nuance, on stuff that may be common, not necessarily common to us, but just little variations of something we already do? And that's up to the coordinators. They got to say, okay, guys, are we going to, you know, because when push comes to shove, you're going to go back to the womb anyway. You're going to do what you do best. But sometimes those little deals, those little plays I have found, particularly if the opponent has not seen you run them, can be very effective.
They're inviting it though, Al. They're inviting it. They're telling me, please run some pin and pulls to the open side. Please do it. Now, what are the odds though? I ask you this. What about TCU departing from what is convention for them? You know, what we saw on film was typically, like you said, they go to a four eye opposite the tight end. They would shift to that. There would be a shift involved.
Right. More often than not, yes.
The reason why we don't typically see that is because you can't typically with the regular alignment when they aren't in a four eye. If it's a five, for instance, you can't pin that guy. Four eye, easier to pin him, especially if you give him some flow action the other way. What are the odds that TCU, knowing that, says, you know what, we're not gonna put ourselves in that position too often against this team, and kind of abandon that shift, kind of abandon playing with a four eye? You think there's a good chance of that? They kind of get outside of what they do typically, understanding that it kind of invites Michigan to run them over to the other side.
I think that would be more of a counterpunch. I think they would start with the idea that they're going to play their defense as they've played their defense. The only caveat to that, and this really is arguable whether it's even a caveat, is they'll still play their four eyes, okay? They'll still play their overshifted linebackers. They'll still play their three-man lines, and they'll still play their five across. But they will add defenders to the box. They will call the, in my opinion, and I could be wrong on this, but they will add defenders to the box to stop the run, particularly when they're forced to defend more gaps. And what we found when we watched the video, and you and I watched this yesterday for a long time, that when we did find teams that played with multiple tight ends, and there weren't a hell of a lot of them, but there were some, that those safeties were inside umpire depth. What's that mean? Wherever that umpire lines up, they were inside that umpire. That means they're all on the screen, Sam. You don't need a wide-angle lens to take this shot. They're right in front of you. So I think what you're going to see is add in defenders before you see bastardized alignments that they haven't used before.
Well, here's what I can say. Their corners are really good. All Big 12. One is the Thorpe Award winner. What's the young man? Travius Hodges Tomlinson. Not a big guy. Don't always judge the book by his cover. He's physical, Al. Good open field tackler. And is willing to take on a lineman. He had to take on a Michigan type lineman, though. Number 28. You pointed him out, Al. We talked about him with Vance. He is not one of the guys that they list. He's not the all-conference guy.
No.
But clearly, he is, I don't know what they call him, the star, the buck, the man. He's the man in the run game for that defense because they spill everything to him. So you're going to see some one-on-one opportunities for Donovan Edwards, probably on that guy where you got to make a play on him, Donovan, or he makes a play on you and made the best man. When Vance was saying, if I'm Michigan, I'm adding to my arsenal chipping that guy, especially because I'd rather have matchups with corners than safeties. Is that bastardizing what they do to add that to the lineup? Or how would you attack, how would you approach number 28 in this game?
Oh, I would make him play run and pass. That's the key, is get into some of those condensed formations and pound their ass, and then like they did against Purdue, come off of that same look and take something down the field and make him play both dimensions. Because as soon as they know you can throw the ball and takes bites out of their ass throwing it like they did against Purdue, like they did against Ohio State, all of a sudden that guy's making less tackles, or he's making them further from the line of scrimmage and giving your back the opportunity to maneuver. The only issues you're going to run into is if he's making tackles on the line of scrimmage. If he is creeping up one more step every time he doesn't feel threatened. As soon as he feels threatened and feels the sting of playing tight, that means a ball going over his head for a big bite of yardage. Then all of a sudden, he gets looser, and before you know it, Donovan breaks a long one on him, or somebody does.
A play action, seam, or wheel to Coast and Loveland now. They got to hit with – I mean, you – because he sniffs run hard. I'm talking about number 28 now. He sniffs run hard. I think there's going to be a downfield opportunity to Coast and Loveland specifically in this game. We've seen the last two games, there was a shot play to Coast and Loveland. He delivered a couple of touchdowns on it. I think that's going to be available in this game.
Yeah, I think Loveland and Schoenmaker have to be a major factor in the passing game. And, I mean – in taking big bites out of the defense. Now, Scoo, he does a little of both. I mean, he'll catch those short routes. He'll do it all down, and that's all cool. That's good. But I think they have to be a factor coming off of play action passes, coming off of stay naked plays, something that allows JJ to sit in that pocket and take the ball down the field on him. Because once they're able to do that, the whole game opens up. Now, the whole thing opens up. But expect this, and don't be surprised if you see this. It may be like a lot of the other games. The first half may be, oh, God, what doggone it, we just aren't scoring up. The game's too close, you know, something happens. We didn't – had to kick another field goal right there. This is the type of game as much as any game. It may be the second half before you start to see the wear and tear on the defense because the ball's being run at them. A team that has not seen anybody this year that is that stubborn about running the football.
Yeah, Steven, I'm going to give you guys an opportunity to ask a lot of questions. But Steven Kukin says, sounds like they have a safety instead of a linebacker, which that's what it's exactly. Doesn't that make them light and vulnerable to a power football? Yes. But
that's our point.
But don't let that take away from your opinion of number 28. I mean, he's as physical as a linebacker. He may not be as big as a linebacker. He's as physical as a linebacker. Allen is a very sure tackler. I wouldn't minimize, you know, his ability based on size. I think that dude is a guy as a coordinator. I would think you, Al, would have to account for.
Yeah, and remember now, he's the guy that's hardest to block. So he's going to be around the ball. He should be around the ball more than most of the guys. And they've got, as I said earlier, they've got to play a numbers game. They have got to add numbers to stop the Michigan run. He's the logical candidate, among others, but he's the most logical candidate to be that extra number. So he's going to make some tackles, or he's going to be around the ball to try and make tackles, okay? And it's going to be incumbent on Michigan to see to it that they loosen him up or beat him once the play gets started. Now, they have shown an ability to do that the entire season, and they will continue to. But what I did notice, and if you watch TCU play every game, they hit you, they run, they flow, and they play hard. They do. And I don't see anybody loafing. I think they have a great feel for what their package is all about, what they want to get accomplished. I think the message has been sent to them on how they want to play, and they'll be challenging. But structurally, is the greatest challenge for them is structurally, can they hold up against a pure muscle team that's not going to throw the ball 35 times or play 10 personnel 60 snaps a game?
Which is what they saw in the Big 12. Again, I got to say – their resiliency, you know, their ability to step up and make a stop when they need to, that stuck out to me. Now, look, they gave up big plays. And so when I say resiliency, they would bounce back. I mean, this is not comparable to Michigan when you talk about how stifling their defense has been. I guess relatively speaking, in the Big 12, they've been pretty good. But they've given up a lot of big plays. They've given up a lot of points. Mm-hmm. And so I think there are going to be some of those available for Michigan in this game. But I agree with you, Al. Watching the games with you, watching the games with Vance, I think Michigan is going to use your word, pound their ass, because I don't think that they've seen anything like it. So let's dig into the Texas, because you and I, we sat and watched the Texas game, and that keeps being a point of reference, mainly because Bijan Robinson is supposed to be the best back in the country. He may be physically the most talented back in the country. I don't think he's a better back than Blake Corum. I think Blake Corum has better vision. I think he's similar to Donovan in that he looks for the home run and can get it, but they're just not as physical, and they're not as determined a run team, talking about Texas, as Michigan is.
There is no question. I think Texas wants to do a lot of stuff, you know, and that's the nature of their offense, and that's how they choose to move the ball. But to be a good running team, and this can be your greatest, best friend and worst enemy, is you have to be hard-headed. You have to be a guy that says, just because they stop us a time or two, that doesn't mean I'm going to stop trying, okay? Texas isn't that type of team. If they're not going to pound you on 14 dual plays, they're not going to do it. They have it in their offense, but are they going to call it like Michigan's going to call it? No way. Do they have a power play? Hell yeah, they got a power. We saw it. It wasn't bad. They ran it once. Okay, they ran it once. Michigan, if they find a little crack in your armor, they are going after it. And they aren't going to give up just because one time they attacked it, it didn't work. You may see that same thing in the second half run 15 times when you may have only saw it early once or twice. They'll go back and make you prove you can stop their bread and butter. I did not see that mentality in Texas.
Yeah. They don't have, to Chris Hout's point, Texas's line is not U of M's line. And Steve Sarkisian is not Jim Harbaugh with his how determined he is to establish a physical tone in the game. I think people get fooled out because he was at Alabama at all. You know, he's bringing that Bama style to Texas. I think Sarkisian style was reined in by Nick Saban.
Yeah,
now he's able to do what he wants to do in Texas.
Exactly. I would completely agree with that. Now, I do see some of the same plays, but I don't see the frequency of finesse plays at Alabama that I see at Texas. I think there's a lot of trick 'em, dick 'em in Texas, a lot of it good stuff, a lot of stuff that, oh, man, it's a blast to tell it straight, okay? But the persistent, I'm going to kick your ass, you know, I'm coming downhill, and we're going to, you know, you may beat us, but if you're going to beat us throwing our haymakers, you know, I don't see that thinking. I see more variation, diversity, you know, all that. And guys can win like that. But this team we're playing here, the TCU, didn't see that from Texas. They're about to see it.
Dude, just look at the stats in the game, right? So Bijan Robinson, I think he would have had like 30 or something yards, something like that. They ran him 12 times in the game in a one position. He's supposed to be the best back in the country, right? That means he's your best football player. This is your quarterback's first game back from injury. You throw it 39 times in a one-possession game and run it 12 with the best back in the country.
Now, you just said the key thing. Wait, slow down. In a what possession game?
One possession.
Now, see, I could see 39 throws if you're trying to catch up, right? That's happened to me before as a coordinator. Oh, God, you threw 42 times. Hell yes, we were down 3 touchdowns, you know? But in a one-possession game that he only carried the ball how many times?
12 times.
12 times, yeah. See, that tells you something right there. That tells you that they're not bent on running him. They love him. They'll hand it to him. He'll get some tries. But will he ever get into the rhythm that Blake Corum got into or that Donovan Edwards got into? I don't think so. Not unless they're winning the game by a lot and they're needed to run the clock out.
Yeah, man, and – two of the runs, think about this. So they ran 2 duo plays in there, at least to my recollection. And they only ran those because they were backed up to the end zone, Al. And they ran them crappy. It's like, I mean, you're watching it. They're mistargeting. Linemen are mistargeting. The running back's not reading it right. It's like, it's a play for them. But they run the play, but they don't run the play.
Yes, like,
they don't
run the play. There's a clear difference between that now. Do you? I run every play in the world, but they run them all good. And when you run a play like the duo or run a play like the power, or, you know, run the counter, it's got to be your culture. It's got to be something that you're running and you're not discouraged by failure. You know what I mean? You know that, okay, they stopped this once. So what? Let's call it again. And there may be a game you come out of it and you say, oh, God, we never did get going. But you'll never be any good running the ball if you start taking a defeatist attitude as soon as they stop it a couple times.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm going to have you build a game plan at the end. And with an emphasis on the run game plan, because you actually, Al Borges sat down and literally built the run game plan from watching what other teams did. So we're going to bring that to you a little bit later on. If you have questions for Al, start lining them up now. So I'm going to actually put a little prompt in the comments here. If you have questions for Al, put them in the comments, and I'll be sure to ask as many of them as time permits. But as we got toward the end, Baylor and Kansas State, again, these were teams that were able to get some things in the run game against TCU. Here's my question that I need you to dissect. Was it just scheming, Al? And I don't mean to minimize that. Or did they physically push them around? Because with Michigan, I think you get both. I think you get scheming and physicality, but I'm curious, what were the threads? Was there a common thread for Baylor and Kansas State in the Big 12 championship game with the rush success they had versus TCU at the end of the season?
Well, a couple of Kansas State kind of stole some of Baylor's offense. They stole a little bit of their game plan because a couple plays showed up that Baylor had run. Now, Baylor is another team. They will run, oh, my God, you talk about a lot of gadgetry. There's a lot of tomfoolery in their run game and their pass game. But the thing I'll say for them, that said, is you pulled up a stat yesterday. I think Baylor rushed for 183 yards a game. Okay, that's not bad. That's good. That's good, respectable rushing. That's making you play the run. I mean, it's not imposing, but it is pretty good. But in that game, they rushed for 240-something. You can find that number. But it was significantly more than they rushed for the entire season against what is probably the best team in the conference. One of the top, one of the top four teams in the country. Now, I got to believe there was some scheming done there to be able to do that against them, they understood TCU's defense and attacked it accordingly. Otherwise, they would not have put those kind of numbers up when they don't even do that on an average, right? So I think what they did more was scheme than pushing them off the ball. I will say that, okay?
Jay said all we need is some dookie dookie and it's over.
Well, you got to have some dookie dookie, Sam. That's all that's a given. Get that thing out there, get in the perimeter, and start doing some shakes and dookie dookie. And sometimes you get a little zzzz with some dookie dookie, it's over. And we got just the guy to do it.
All right, so what about JJ? What about JJ in this game? Because this kind of encapsulates a bunch of different questions. JJ is a run threat. We know they have to have more confidence in him now throwing the football down the football field. As much as they say they were holding back some of that play action passing game for the end of the season, I happen to think that some of it was building up that trust factor. When you got Blake Corum, you're a play caller, Al. You trust Blake implicitly, right? You trust that offensive line. Real easy to lean on. Sharon said as much. It's kind of hard to go away from that when it's working all the time, right? Well, mm-hmm. You get to that Ohio State game, you don't have a choice but to trust the young fella a little more. And he showed himself to be worthy of that trust. I say that to say he'll take some downfield shots, but I wonder what you think of how he'll factor in to the rushing attack, to the run game in this matchup with TC.
Well, what's one thing, again, that popped out is as we watched game to game, there was, again, as we said, kind of a common theme. And some of it was, okay, well, the OT counter looked good against Oklahoma, right? Remember, first snap we saw, they ripped one off, first play of the game. And then later on, they ran another OT play, and he walked in the end zone from, I don't know, 20-something yards out.
Yeah.
Well, something that went with that is if the team had a running quarterback, and by that, I mean a guy capable of running the football. Now, the kid from Kansas was really capable of running the football, not to the Denard Robinson level, but pretty good. What they did is build some of these OT plays off and some of these U-turn pennant pulls and built the quarterback into them, where they would fake one direction and OT the other direction with the quarterback. Well, hell, Sam, we've seen that. We've seen that, right? We've seen JJ do that about 3 weeks ago. We telestrated, hell, Urban Meyer telestrated that play with JJ. So they know they got that. You got still those horn plays, same type of deal. You can fake one direction, come back with a horn play with a quarterback. So it's easy for all the big guys. Don't have to change anything. But now you can use that plus one factor, that plus one, add that blocker to what we know is going to be a loaded box and build the quarterback into the run with some good misdirection.
All right. And here's another one, Al, sort of keeping with that offensive, philosophy, that theme. When you look at, the TCU blitz package, you said it's all coming from the linebackers. What is it about the 3-3-5? Because Rich Rodriguez used to talk about this. He used to say, well, one of the benefits of it is they don't know where the pressure is coming from. You sort of alluded to, all the pressure is coming from the linebackers. Does that make it easier or harder? I'm curious what you think of that, because Rodriguez made it sound like it was tougher to prepare for a blitz package out of a 3-3-5. You made it sound like it might be easier because you know where the blitzers are going to come from.
Well, I've faced 3-3-5 defense coaching with Rocky Long. I coached with Rocky Long for 2 years at UCLA and 2 years at San Diego State. I saw the 3-3-5 I ever want to see the rest of my life, and coached against Rocky Long at Oregon State and when I was at San Jose State. So I understand this package is Rocky's package is beyond what these guys do, much far beyond it. They're a pure blitzing team, Rocky's back. This team is not. I would not classify as a blitzing team. They are a three-man line. They don't even play triple stacks that often. They usually play base 3-4 looks. They use the scrapes, both weak and strong. They'll come through the middle of the defense with 2-4 eyes, almost like a double eagle type blitz. But I would not classify this team as a major blitzing team. I don't remember seeing them in zero. I don't remember basically blitz zero defense. So, yeah, I think it can be some headaches with where the pressure's coming from. But if they're not really that big a pressure team, I don't see them that as an issue with regard to Michigan. I think Michigan will handle their pressures. But Michigan's biggest issue is going to be is getting their plays started with those added in numbers in the run game. That, I think, is a much bigger issue than where the pressure's coming from in this football game.
And last one. And again, this is as we get to the questions from the people and we sort of prepare you for the game plan that Al's built, and specifically the run game plan. We mentioned pin and pulls. We mentioned counters, right? We mentioned duos. We didn't mention the other piece of base piece of their run game, split zones. Why?
Split zones a little tougher, and you don't see too many of them against them. And as much as I love the split zone, the bluff zone off the split zone, all those types of things, but because they're in a 3-4 front, and I want to take this a little bit at a time because there is some intricacies to this, is in a 3-4 front, you're always forced to push your tackle and guard out to the widest guy, okay? And then push your guard and center to the play side linebacker and nose. And then they play a 4-eye on the backside, right? We talked about that already, who forces you to engage your backside tackle.
He's inside the tackle, right?
Yeah, you don't have a – so you're pushing your blocking scheme out to the widest. You're pushing your guard and your center to the call side linebacker. You're bringing that guy across to kick out the first guy off the edge, which in many instances could be a safety rolling down. Who's got the inside linebacker? Who's got the weak inside linebacker? That's where your issues come, is you can oftentimes come up short because when you block the play that way, and if I could illustrate this, I could show you a more finite picture, is the ball is going to come back. It's going to usually get pushed back to the middle of the blocking scheme and into an unblocked weak inside linebacker. So you don't see, man, I could count on three fingers the amount of split zones I saw in all the games I watched. Where four-man line teams, hell, they're all over the place. I mean, split zones are run 5-6 times a game against teams that feature that play.
Yeah. Everybody runs split zones. So when you say, just to encapsulate it, that you don't see very many split zones, I take that different than when you say, I don't see very many duos. They don't have the personnel. It's not in the DNA of the conference.
Completely different thinking, yeah. Yeah, duo requires muscle. Duo requires muscle, extra tight ends, guys in condensed formation. Split zone, you can be spread sideline to sideline. All you need is some guy to either motion or line up inside the core and come across the formation. You still got the defense relatively spread. So you don't need all those muscle groups to run split zones.
Yeah, so again, outside hitting run plays. Hitting run plays. Michigan has them in their repertoire. You know, you hit outside with a counter, you hit outside with a pin and pull. See some stretch in this game, Al?
Possibly. That was the one thing I put a little asterisk by. Now, I know, and this is, again, you got to be careful. Too much candy in the candy store, Sam. A lot of candy in the candy store. If you pick every single piece of candy, you eat it, you get sick. So you got to be careful when you go into the candy store. Pick what you're going to eat so you don't get sick. So is the stretch a piece of candy I want to eat? Well, it shows up. It shows up, you know. It's easy to fall into that, hey, man, Baylor's running the stretch play right up their yin-yang, you know. And we have a stretch play. We've run it. We haven't featured it a ton. You know, certain games we ran a little more than others. But I would not be surprised, because it is in their offense, that they don't test the waters on it a little bit. Now, understand, the way the stretch play hit, as soon as I say stretch play, everybody thinks the ball's going to the edge, right? Well, the way the play hit against them, it did not do that. The way it hit against them is they kind of collected the defense and pushed them wide, forced people to run, and came back underneath the play side tackle, but it hit good. I mean, one time Baylor ran it and the guy walked in the end zone. It wasn't nothing to it. I think their first touchdown. But when the play was run and the play got started, it was always good yardage. So it's a play probably is in the plan, might be tested. If they don't handle it very well, they could make a battlefield decision and say, hey, let's run some more stretches. Yeah. You know what I mean? There, but it would be a play that you would be more inclined to give up on if it didn't work early than a duo play where you say, I don't care, we're just going to, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So don't be surprised if you see one. But if you, I'm not going to bet on seeing 10.
Yeah. All right, let's keep it. It makes sense with them being a fast flow defense. There's a reason why misdirection works. There's a reason why cutting back underneath works. Those T, that crew triggers hard on run action. All right, so Jason Sudeikis. I don't know if this is the Jason Sudeikis or not, but we'll pretend that it is.
Jason Sudeikis?
Ted Lasso himself. I don't know if it is or not.
But who's Jason Sudeikis? Help me. Is this guy somebody famous or what? I don't want
to. Al, fake it. Fake like you know who Ludacris is, Al. All right? Famous story from Al's book. Ludacris gets on the bus and he's like, who are you? It's like, man, I'm Ludacris, man. Like, Al, come on, man. You know, just say Ted Lasso. You'll know who Jason Sudeikis
is. I got you. Go. Okay, good, Slim. Cover my ass. Right.
Jason Sudeikis says, do you think they'll stay with mostly a 3-3-5 scheme for this game or bring in more linebacker / linemen to counter Michigan's heavy looks?
They'll do what they've done that put them, what are they, 12-1? Yeah, they're not going to change their defense. They'll add numbers. They'll add numbers. You get people closer, but it's still going to be basically 3-3-5 personnel.
All right. Chris House says, Coach Borges, at what point in the game will Michigan take control physically?
Boy, that's a good question. I think the flow of the game is going to dictate that for the most part. It could be a slow start. So, again, I don't want a bunch of tears at halftime. Every week, if I'm with some group, I'm watching a game, play on the road, everybody's got big old alligator tears in their eyes going, oh, when's Michigan going to do this? They're too conservative. And then the second half, they blow them right off the map, okay? So it could be something that takes place more in the second half. I wouldn't be surprised. And understand, too, TCU's got a good quarterback. So they're going to put some points up somewhere. I mean, as good as Michigan's defense is, they are equipped to stay in the game. So it may take a little longer, but the only thing that matters is that it happens. Okay. Is that it happens. And darn near every single football games it's happened. And I think in this one, whether it happens early or not, I think it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah. I think TCU's offense, defense, their best weapon in this game is Max Duggan. I think he's going to be the best quarterback Michigan has seen this year. I think is C.J. Stroud more talented? Let me qualify my commentary again. C.J. Stroud is more talented. He's a better arm talent. His ball placement is superb when he's not under pressure. He can run a little bit. Don't know why he chooses not to, but he can. So physically, he checks all the boxes. But what Max Duggan has over him is that ball player factor.
Yeah, he's a baller. He is. Yeah. He's a baller.
And so that lends itself to this question. You as a play caller, Al. This one comes from, let's see. Here we go, from Steve Sherrick, who says,
Famous too, Sam?
No. Okay. Well, he's probably famous in his whole – I'm sorry, Steve. Yeah. He's famous in his own house.
Okay.
All right. I just don't
want to get skirt over a famous guy again. Yeah, go ahead.
How much of the game plan will be to keep Duggan Robinson, their big-time wide receiver, on the sideline? Was protecting the defense part of your game plan as a play caller, and do you think that'll be part of Michigan's game plan?
I think if they just do what they do, that'll happen. But, yes, that is the plan. But look at the time of possession other than I think the Illinois game. I think it was the Illinois game. Look at the time of possession numbers over the course of the season. And almost every game has fallen into that deal, you know, where the other team is on the sideline tapping their foot, waiting to get back on the field because Michigan's either, you know, incrementally driving the ball down the field. And, against Ohio State, it was more, you know, they went right to the throat. But for the most part, Michigan's been that kind of team. So I think a lot of the game plan has to be geared. I don't think the offense has to think that way. You know what I mean? I think the offense has to think, we're going to move the ball on these guys. We're going to do what we got to do to score points. But just by the nature of the way they play, it should keep Duggan and company off the field.
All right. Keep it going. Next one comes from Con Man 1342. says, will Michigan be able to throw against this TCU defense? Two physical corners, two all Big 12 corners. One was a Thorpe Award winner. What do you think, Al?
Be challenging. These guys can cover. They're good. They're good in the back end. They're going to have to be precise. Texas couldn't throw the ball worth a darn against them, but there were other teams that did throw it pretty good against them. So it's doable, and Michigan has the weapons to do it, I believe. But I think that the bulk of what they do has got to come off their play action game, Sam. I just do. They're big bites, much like the Ohio State game. I think their big bites or big pieces of yardage have to come off their play action game when they're attacking those safeties for playing too tight, you know, and putting those corners out there one on one and having to defend the entire field, which TCU will occasionally vacate that inside. Even though they're not blitzing sometimes, they will still leave the middle open for those receivers to maneuver, and not to mention the tight ends too. So I think they can throw the ball on him, but I think their best answer is do it off a play action pass.
Yeah.
And don't force yourself into a lot of pure pass situations, and that's common sense.
Yeah, JJ has just been, play action shots. He has just been, he's really found something. And I think the interesting thing for me watching him is, as much as you talk about his footwork and mechanics being inconsistent with those, and that being one of the places where you want to see him grow in this offseason, he seems to be pretty consistent with his mechanics on play action passing.
Yeah, and it's funny. Play passes tend to force you, particularly under center, not as much in gun as under center. They tend to force you to be more methodical with your drop, because you have to go through all the gesticulations of the fake and all that stuff, take X amount of steps. The structure of his drop seems so much more sound when he's play passing. So I think that helps. I really do. The gun, again, that can tend to get people wanting. The problem with the shotgun sometimes is it'll get quarterbacks wandering in the pocket a lot and not be more intent on timing their throws. So you got to be real disciplined when you're in the shotgun about still timing out all your passes.
Yeah, and so this next one is a two-parter, trying to piece them together, talking about scripting plays, all right? So JMatt277 says, Al, how important is it to come out the gate with a level of disrespect to TCU's defense on our scripted first series or two? Evan Canson follows that up asking, how many plays did you script to start a game, and what would your script look like versus TCU? This sort of gets into us building the game plan, and what was the strategy involved with script? What were you trying to accomplish with scripting, other than obviously scoring? What was the purpose of your script, Al? So can you kind of wrap all that up for us?
Yeah, you got to read my book. It's in there. I got a whole chapter, damn near, on scripting. Number one, when you script plays, it gives you a chance, first of all, to practice firsthand basically the order that you're going to start the game in. That puts the offense kind of in a comfort zone. Not that you go exactly by the script, but you go close enough to the script that they kind of know what's coming, if you know what I mean. Number two, you can present the defense with a variety of looks and kind of make the defensive coordinator a liar. Now, what's that mean? That means the defensive coordinator the last 4 weeks has been programming TCU's defense to look for certain plays in different formations, motions, and shifts. Now, what you do in your script is, it doesn't mean you don't run those plays, but maybe you use different formations and script and shifts or whatever to run the same plays. This defensive players go back to the bench. Now, coach, you said if they were in a 3-by-1, I was going to get this and this. They didn't do that. And they may not even say that, but sometimes they think it, and they start lacking. They start not trusting the call coming from the bench because they weren't programmed to see some of the things they've seen. Number three, you get a chance to script who's going to touch the ball. I'm going to make sure in those first 15 plays that Donovan Edwards touches the ball 8 times. I'm going to make damn sure that happens, okay? And if I'm trying to call it willy-nilly off my call sheet, that might not happen, okay? So these are all things. I mean, there's so many other things. Seeing how people adjust to how your looks. You get in bunch. You see how they line up to bunch, and you know how to counterpunch. my goodness, they're so far overloaded the bunch because they're looking for the dual play. We can run a counter play back the other direction. There's only two defenders back there. Things like that. You get an idea to see the back end of their coverage. And when you spread them, when you spread them, they have this look and that look when we're in a 3-by-1. All of it's documented. Now you can go to the counterpunch that works with that. So you're basically documenting information based on what you've done, trying to surprise your opponent, but not necessarily trick your opponent. Just try and get their cleats out of the ground. What's that mean? Don't let them play with their cleats in the ground where they're locked, they're loaded, and they're yelling, "Here it comes." You don't want that. You want them to be, okay, check two, check three, check four. You want them talking about how they got to get adjusted to you rather than here comes the duo play. That's what scripting does for you. That and a million other, I could make a whole show just about this, but that's kind of encapsulates the thinking.
All right. All right, Al, we get back to the questions. Did you say how many plays you script? Did you say that?
Well, I that's changed over the years, but I finished scripting about 15. What I would do is I'd script about 15 plays, about half of them runs, half of them passes, mixing down in distance, whether thrown on first or second down, making sure that the guys I wanted to touch it touched it. And then I'd usually have two other plays, like 17. And the only reason I'd have 17 is because certain of those 15 plays, certain plays were only going to be run on a certain hash mark. So if I was on the wrong hash mark to call the next play, I would call a different play and then call that play I was going to call when we got the ball back to that hash mark. One more thing, Sam, before we leave the scripting, because I think when I learned about scripting back in, I believe it was 1979, Sam Weish introduced me to the concept of scripting. It's for first and second down. Okay. It's not for third down. Okay. You don't just call these plays. I'm calling this play, and not oblivious to what the down and distance is. That would not be smart. You script for first and second down when you know you've always got something ready for a third down situation. Knowing too that when you break the red area, you may not want to run one of the plays in your field area script. You may want to go to a red zone play. So it's not cast in stone, nor does it necessarily follow one after the other. I've called three plays in a row and jumped down to the sixth play, went back to the fourth play. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to follow an exact sequence, but it is basically the plays you practiced, we practiced on Thursday, about 15 to 17 that were done usually by about the middle of the second quarter.
You studied under some dudes. Sam Weish, longtime Bengals coach. Bill Walsh, obviously Hall of Famer, 49ers coach. You have some outstanding influences, Al Borges, but we already know that because you're the key, right? You're the key.
You said that, not me, Sam.
The hell you didn't say that. Yeah, you did. Hey, he even had a background that was a key that he was going to put behind there.
I'll put that key background up sooner or later.
All right. This from Malachi. Says, I think RPOs will work really well for the TCU defense. Am I off base?
No, you're not off base, and they would. And some teams have done it. Texas ran some RPOs. Everybody did a little bit. The problem is they're just not Michigan's culture. I would guess, and I think, Sam, you'd probably see three or four RPOs before the game's over, but we ain't seeing 10. I'd be very surprised if they did that. So I think you'll see it. I think they're good. They're great. But Michigan's a team that doesn't want to put all that on the quarterback. They would rather put it on the line and the running back. And when you start doing RPOs, that's a lot of mechanic for the quarterback, okay? He got to be able to read run, read pass, throw accurately, throw off free defenders, make a lot of awkward throws. Teams do that. They do the hell out of it, but they're not Michigan. They don't run the ball like Michigan. They don't do other things that Michigan does so well. So I think you may see a few RPOs, but you won't see a bunch.
All right. Moving on down the line, we get into questions about what would your run menu look like. We'll get back to that. Here is one from Andrew. The cornerbacks look solid and pesky. Do we try to abuse their safeties and linebackers in the passing game with our tight ends?
Yes, yes, and yes. I agree with everything you said. I think so. As good as their corners are, they're good players. They have to be tested. They have to be tested. We have enough good athletes on the flank to put them through the paces a little bit. But I do agree that the tight ends have to be a big part of the passing game in this football game.
Real quick, Al, just to kind of put you in the other seat for a minute, kind of like I did with Vance, because we're getting a lot of questions about TCU's offense against Michigan's defense. I mean, what would be your game plan to kind of slow down what they do, try to contain Max Duggan a bit? What did you see when you looked at TCU offense?
Well, they can certain games, they're really efficient, and he's a playmaker and a passer, which is always a pain. But I think the big thing, and I think Michigan's just done a great job of this all year. No reason why they shouldn't in this game. Keep everything in front of you. Minimize the damage on minimize any damage, so that you're not giving up big plays. Play the run the way you've been playing the run. And I think the Michigan defense will be fine. They have not shown Sam a consistent vulnerability to anything to me. Now, yeah, you could anecdotal evidence say, oh, yeah, they did this in this game. But has that happened consistently? What can you say? Now, I know in the past it was everybody complained about Coach Brown getting beat on crossing routes, right? And, you know, so, this and that, something else, and not leaving those corners. But with Minter, I just don't know if you can point to something game in and game out and say they're vulnerable. So I think if they can just play their game, knowing that they're going to make some plays, they got good players on their side, but the damage stays reasonable, I think the defense will hold up great. And I'm thinking they're going to get Michael Morris back.
Yeah.
And he is a difference maker. He is a difference maker. He's good against the run. He's good against the pass, and he's going to cause TCU some problems.
This one from Mike Miller. Al, is it easier, harder, or no different for O linemen to block defenders in a 3-3 stack who have never faced it before, given the variety of attack angles?
Yeah, it can be, because it's a little unique. But here's the good news is they've had 4 weeks to practice it. It can really be a pain in the butt if you've only got a little bit of time. That's a headache. And I always felt like I knew that defense pretty well because of my exposure. But sometimes me knowing it didn't mean a damn thing. They got to know it. And you're right. The blocking angles can be tougher. There can be some things. But the one thing about Michigan's run game, and I'm going to talk about that most part, it's not – they don't reinvent the wheel with the run game. They run duo plays, which we've talked about at nauseam, where they're basically gapping dudes off. You know, if it's run right, there's really no place for a 3-3 defense to run through. They run counter plays where you're gapping dudes off. It's hard. They don't run a lot of finesse plays where they're separating blockers all the time and people can leak through gaps. That's not their nature. So I don't see 3-3 being the issue with Michigan that it might be with other teams who run the ball differently. I hope that answered the question.
You did. All right. Here's one. QB Coach 9 says, Al, loved your book, second edition. Uh-huh. Second edition, add play diagrams and an appendix for those who are interested in the deeper details. Thanks and go blue.
Well, here's the deal. I'm kind of glad he brought that. And that's Quarterback Coach 9. Now he knows what time it is. Okay. Here's the problem is I wrote a book back in 2000 that was all X's and O's. It was coaching the West Coast quarterback. But they told me this time, I said, when I started the book, I says, do you want to sell the book? Do you want it to sell? I said, yeah, I do. He goes, well, then you're going to have to sell it to men and women. And most women don't like X's and O's. They want stories. They want, you know what I mean? So I left X's and O's out of this book on purpose. And I did more describing rather than diagramming. So, and trying to diagram to people that really knew football and people that may not have known as much football. So I left the X's and O's out of that book on purpose. That was by intent. But next time around, maybe we'll throw a couple in there. I don't know. But if you want to sell it, I was told you better be careful with X's and O's. The people on this show, they want X's and O's, man. Right. But, you know, if they all promise to buy the book, I'll do it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Al. So here's a viewer who's been paying attention. Says Robert Dendorfer says, Al also thought Ohio State wouldn't try to change things and copy Illinois. It says Ohio State should have listened to Al. This is a question about you saying TCU won't get too far away from their DNA. Well, we just saw Ohio State do that, Al Borges, right? What? That's why they got beat, though, as bad
yeah,
as
Yeah, that's why they got beat. Yeah, they did. They, you know, Ohio State didn't really change how they played in terms of how they lined up. The Bruins lined up. They just played a lot more man-to-man, which is a big change, okay? And at the end of the day, realistically speaking, you played 40 snaps out of 60 of man-to-man defense, and you ain't played anywhere near that in any other game. They did change their defense. It just wasn't a structural change. It was more of a play caller change. So, I don't know. I just think when you've won that many games, you think you got some answers. You know what I mean? And we'll beat these guys doing what we do best, and I'm not going to bastardize our package to just because it's Michigan. I think that's probably how they'll think. That could be bad thinking. Yeah, who knows? Could be good thinking. We'll find out.
Dan Briggs, my brother-in-law, he says, Coach, which team boasts the most talented, the more talented quarterback between the teams?
No, wait a minute. He's your brother-in-law?
My brother-in-law.
Oh, my God.
Hey, man, huge
Michigan. Yeah, we got to have a separate talk with him.
Freshman at Michigan. Daughter's a freshman at Michigan.
Yeah, no, whatever. I'm just, I feel sorry for that guy. You guys probably do family dinners and stuff together, and he can't get away from it.
He was there when the Buckeyes got that ass whooped. He was in the studio.
Yeah, I'm sure he was, and I'm sure you let him know, too.
Oh, hell yeah.
I forgot the question. What was it now? You got to give me that one again.
Which team boasts the more talented QB between these teams?
Well, the better, to me, J.J. McCarthy is first-round draft picked out. Yes. Now, Harry's numbers? No, they're not yet. But Dugan is a guy that had to re-earn his job, but he did, and he's they have flourished with him at quarterback. But if you let me pick, pick players, a little pickup game, and those two are available, I'm picking J.J. McCarthy first because I think he brings more to the table, and I think it's just a matter of time before you see how much he brings to the table. Even though at this point it may not be as sexy as Dugan, I will take J.J. McCarthy.
All right, so we got some Buckeyes in here.
Oh, here we go.
We got some Buckeyes in here.
Evil Empire, Sam. We got the Evil Empire. Be careful.
Who need to listen better when I talk about the quarterback. You remember when I said that Illinois, that Ohio State couldn't do what Illinois did defensively? But they didn't have the personnel to do what Illinois did, right? That isn't saying Ohio State isn't talented. They're very talented. They don't fit what Illinois does. They tried it, got that ass whooped. So when I was talking about C.J. Stroud, I said C.J. Stroud is more talented than Max Duggan. He is a better pro prospect than Max Duggan. Arm talent, ball
no
placement,
doubt.
Mobility.
No doubt.
But the ball player quotient. Listen with your ears. Don't talk, just listen. The ball player quotient, the guy who was able to will his team, that's Max Duggan. The guy, the playmaker that put the team on his back in multiple instances, down double digits, on the road, fought back multiple times, won defensive struggles, the whole nine. Al just laid it out, had to win his job back. When C.J. Stroud faced the biggest adversity of his career twice in a row, it wasn't enough bleach to clean his pants. They had to burn him. That's how badly they were streaked. So I'm sorry. If you don't like to hear the truth, I'm trying to help y'all out. I want the ball. The ball player is going to be tougher for Michigan to deal with. That's not saying C.J. Stroud isn't talented. Get your underwear out a bunch. He's a very talented guy. Are you trying to get him drafted or are you trying to win the game? You're trying to get him. You take the guy that gets drafted to highest. I'll take the guy that's going to give me the best chance to win the game in college football. How about that? And hell no, I don't want the Lions to draft. Intangibles, Al, to me, you coached. I've seen plenty of talented quarterbacks, immensely talented quarterbacks, right, that couldn't throw their way out of an adversity-laden situation. Being blessed with the best arm in the draft didn't work for Ryan Leaf. Didn't work for what's my man that went to Cal who could throw from his knees through the uprights? Kyle Bowyer. I mean, we've seen plenty of talented quarterbacks get drafted high in the draft that couldn't bust the great in the NFL because they didn't have the intangibles. So that's what when I'm talking about ball player, that's why I say it's going to be tougher for Michigan to deal with Max Duggan. I'm not saying C.J. Stroud didn't. See, the Buckeyes don't listen now. Buckeyes don't listen.
Well, now that you've gone under your tirade, which you always do, I'm going to bring this back to a football conversation. I think C.J. Stroud has got NFL talent. I don't think you're arguing that. See, if I had a complaint, I mean, if I was coaching C.J. Stroud and get all the BS aside, I would like to see C.J. Stroud run the ball more. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not talking about turning him into Denard Robinson, okay? But he has good legs. I saw him pull a bluff play and ran right by the defense. But I never see that featured because it would add so much more to defending him. And then number two, he's got to prove he can win the 12th game. And I'm not, again, the 12th game being, well, Michigan right now, I'm talking about the 12th game anywhere. It may be in the pros. It may be, I don't know, the Giants against the Redskins for a chance to go to the playoffs. He's got to prove that he can win those games, not just the games where he's blowing people out and he's feeling his oats and receivers are making spectacular catches and all that. He's got to take that next step. But from a skill set perspective, I think he's an NFL talent. But there are some things I don't think he uses all the equipment in his shed.
Yeah, I told you what I think the problem is. Anyway. We also have some Big 12 fans in the room that are taking offense. They're saying we aren't giving TCU enough credit for the job they did against Texas. They shut Texas down. That's what Greg Lacy has been killing this point all show long. If they shut down Texas and you're disrespecting them and the Big Ten is the second weakest conference in FBS in my mind. And, you know, if they shut Texas down, they're going to be formidable against Michigan. Look, I got respect for their defense. It is my contention, watching these games with you and with Vance, who is a Big 12 guy, they haven't seen – Texas is not even close to even close to a reasonable facsimile of what Michigan is going to bring to the table.
Yeah, they don't have the same demeanor. That's what I'm saying. And I have complete respect for TCU. I think they got – like I said, I think they got some really good football players. But they're going to be challenged by – Michigan in a way they were not by Texas. That simple. I mean, Michigan is going to force them to play in the box and play four quarters that way. Texas had no intention of doing that. They dabbled in it, but they never really forced the issue where Michigan is. And if TCU can stop them, God bless them. Whoever that was that wrote there, they're right and we're wrong. But I'm going to have to see that before I believe it.
Hey, Malachi, I just had to read this and say to the Buckeye in the room, he said, Venice, even your daddy, Zach Smith, said he would take Stetson Bennett over him. And listen, Stetson Bennett, ball player. Stetson Bennett is a ball player. My point, my sentiment, exactly. JT Daniels, more talented quarterback. You know, just arm talent, physical talent, more talented than Stetson Bennett, who quarterbacked him to the championship. When JT Daniels got healthy, did they go back to JT Daniels? Or did he stay with the ball player? When they played Michigan and they said, all right, they got some ball players in front seven. They're gonna walk their nickel down, who is a beast in the box. Are we just going to try to run into that? Or we gonna balance the equation by turning it over to our quarterback and say, hey, young fellow, old fella, Stetson Bennett, RPO aside of this. And Al, he was like a maestro out there.
Oh, my goodness. Between his efficiency in the run-pass option game and the coordinator's ability to make timely calls, particularly early in the game, they were, God bless them. I mean, I was impressed. I was. And I told you, when we watched him a year ago, usually I put the Michigan offense on first when I watch the game, after the game. It's the first time all year I put the Georgia offense on first because I thought it was really, really well done and really well executed. I was impressed by what they did.
Here's one from John Joannidis, who says, Sam, Al, who do you think could be an impact offensive player not named McCarthy or Edwards? I have mine. Who are you going with, Al?
Ronnie Bell and possibly Loveland. Those two jump out at me right away. Now, that being said, Cornelius Johnson has come to the surface here of late, and I think don't be surprised with his range and speed that he isn't a factor in this game. But I think Ronnie Bell is kind of the guy laying in the weeds a little bit, and I think he could be a huge factor, and he could be used inside. You know, he doesn't always have to play out on those really good cover corners. And Loveland, you know, Loveland, because he continues to develop game in and game out. Now, in two games, he's made two big plays, and I think he brings something to the table. He's not going to be drawing great coverage, so they're going to have to account for him. But those are the names I think about right off the top.
Yeah. You know, Greg Lacy's still in the mix talking about the Texas game and then being shut down. Vance brought up a great point. It was Quinn Ewers' first game back. Why are you throwing 39 passes his first game back? And you're supposed to have the best running back in the country. You run them 12 times. That's just another example of how it's not the same.
Again, Sam, you said the key point earlier is I understand 39 passes if the game is out of hand, but you says it's a one score game, right?
They lost 17-10.
That's my point. Is that's a game where you can work that running back. And just by example, I promise you, if that was the case with Michigan, that Blake Corum, if he's played in that game, would have had more than 12 carries.
Hell,
no doubt in my mind. They may have lost. I don't know, but he would have carried the ball more.
Quarter, man. Come on.
Yeah. That's my point is they don't call offense like that. If you've studied Steve Sarkisian, and I've seen him at SC, at Washington, at Alabama, everywhere, I've watched closely, he doesn't call offense like Michigan calls offense. He doesn't think that way. He thinks run pass, mix. You know, he's not a pound you kind of guy.
He's a trick you guy.
Well, to a degree, yeah. I think there's a lot of nuance in their offense week to week, and I love it. I love that stuff, but there still has to be a core that you got to go back to that allows physicality for your offensive line.
Here's an interesting question. I get it. I get why it's being asked. Mike Miller says, why do we not see the 3-3-3-3-5 base in the NFL?
Well, they'll get the ball run down their throat. That's why. You can't do it in the NFL because – they are a tight end league. They are still a tight end league. They are not a college team that they have their spread plays and they even have RPOs. They still play with tight ends almost every team. You watch the Detroit Lions, you watch the San Francisco 49ers, you watch the Vikings, all the teams that are really doing well, and even some that aren't, still feature tight ends. And it's just difficult. That defense is much, the way they play it is much better built, I think, to handle spread groups. Now, Rocky Long runs a 3-3-5, and the way he plays it is different than the way TCU does and handles tight end teams much better.
Yeah.
But, again, that conference just doesn't see a lot of that. So,
all right. It's game plan time, Al. You've watched every TCU game. You've picked out plays that have worked against them that are on Michigan's menu of plays, and you've done a million game plans. I'm not even exaggerating.
So some good ones, some bad ones, Sam.
Game plan this one for me, Michigan TCU, build it.
Well, from a run game perspective is where everything has to start with Michigan. I mean, that's the kind of team they are. You don't see a ton of duo plays on video. That doesn't matter. Okay, Colorado, Oklahoma State, and Kansas all showed that play. But for us at Michigan, if I'm the coach, we are running that play, and my goal is to get anywhere from 13 to 15 run by the end of the game. 13. Variations, duos from double wings, shift to double wings, bunch, short motion the Z, shift over the wings, shift them back again, put a guy in the backfield, run a duo kick, put a guy in the edge, run a duo kick, but somehow, some way, get to that play a lot of ways and make them prove they can stop it, because that is our bread and butter. And I don't much give a rip if anybody in that conference ever ran the play. We're running that play. Okay. Number two is I'd run, have a power play. Now, how much we ran the power play, I don't know, but it may get two or three shots, maybe four in a game if they're struggling with it. It's a play they run. It's a Harbaugh play that he's kind of hung his hat on over the years. But I would say that has to be in there somewhere, okay? When they have run it, the play's been good. Counter. The counter, and again, in this game, Sam, the OT counter to me is the play. Now, Michigan has run variations of counters. We've seen it, right, with the center pulling, the guard pulling, the backside tackle pulling, the H pulling, the fullback pulling. But the play that shows up best in a play that Michigan has run is the OT play. That's, I think you're going to get that. And not just handing the ball to Donovan Edwards, but also giving J.J. McCarthy a chance to go run it himself, either with reading action like you've seen in the past, or just a pure plus one counter OT play where he can take the ball. Horns, pin and pulls, okay? Right in the wheelhouse. Works good. It shows up on the videos. Like I said, Baylor ran the pin and pull. West Virginia ran the pin and pull. It shows up. I think you're going to see some of that. I think you're going to see one with added gaps where they've got wings running in behind those guys, pulling people. And again, the same deal. You may want to run that and then have your quarterback fake a little fly action and he run a pin and pull. But it shows up on their videos. And I think it's got to be what I would say anywhere from a 5 to 7 times a game. Again, if the game's in line, it's not out of whack. I'd like to say, I think you're going to run between 5 and 7. Horn plays before it's over. Another play we didn't mention, but it shows up, is the open side zone. The open side zone, the play you saw Donovan Edwards hit against Ohio State for 2 long runs, okay? But the way it works against these guys, a little different. The way it works against these guys is because of their 3-4 defense, and they usually have a player outside your tackle, most team are lining up with a tight end on the backside, running the open side zone, and then winding the ball back in behind the tight end. That showed up against SMU. That showed up against Baylor. That showed up against Texas. It was one of the few runs Texas actually ran pretty good. So I think open zone, right in their wheelhouse, something they do well. I think that's
cut play. Back inside the tight end, you said.
Yeah. Usually what happened, he would push it to the open side, move the defense. They would cave down the backside because usually there was a 5 over there, where the tight end and the tackle could double to the inside linebacker. The overhang was free. He was unblocked. It didn't matter. The back would cut inside him, and he'd either miss him or he'd have, 7 to 10 yards before the guy could get him down. So that play showed up. There's no question about it. Now, the other thing, do you want to, and again, this is a coordinator call. Do you want to test the stretch play? I think I'd have it. I'd maybe get into pistol, get into under center stretch plays, run it in behind a tight end, expecting it to probably come back because that's what it's done. But it has been a play that people have shown some vulnerability, that they have shown a vulnerability to. And it is a play Michigan has, although they don't necessarily major in that play. So I think that too would be a good approach in this game. Now, after you got that, you got your 5 or 6 you're running, right? We talked about them. You got your 5 or 6 you're running. Now you got, as a coordinator, you got to decide, all right, man, they show some vulnerability to some other stuff. How or do we want to exploit? How will we or do we even want to exploit the vulnerability they showed against other teams? Other plays that you can run is you can run the open side pin and pull. That shows up against several opponents where they can pin that 4, pull those guards, whether do it in a U-turn fashion or just pull them around the edge. You know that's a soft edge. Vance is right. He hit the nail on the head on that one. There's a soft edge on the open side of the formation. And I think that's got a real chance. They ran an interesting play. Baylor run was a dual play to a wing and pulled the tackle around. He used counter action. And I thought that was a – had a big run on that. I mean, everything was block dual, and the tackle pulled. Actually ended up being kind of a dual kick, if you will, with the tackle doing the kick. And I thought that was a nice variation. Baylor also ran what we call a wham play. Now, I don't know if you know what a wham play is, but Michigan – Harbaugh has run this play in the past. I'd be a little surprised if they ran it, but you never know. Where you can take your split zone guy, the guy that usually does a split zone, mm-hmm. and knock out the nose guard. He will come inside, the center will block back, and you load that nose guard and everybody else just zone block. And Baylor ran that a couple times, and it worked both times they ran it. So these are all things you just got to decide. Do you have time and do you want to sacrifice a couple more duo plays to run these plays? Because that's really what could happen, right? Mm-hmm. And the last one, again, this is not one they run much, but and it's in the pin and pull family, okay? And that's the crack pitch, where you can offset and shotgun, if you want, and pitch the ball to the guy, pin the front side, pull your guard and tackle or whoever you want, and just run the ball around the edge, because that play also showed up from several opponents. So you got all the ones you do and you're going to do, and they know you're going to do. They're not sure exactly how you're going to do them, but they know you're going to do them. And that is not going to dissuade anybody from doing them, because they're going to do it. And it, I think it just becomes a matter of seeing what else you want to toss in there to test the water on a little bit. Or maybe you saw something on the tape that you want to be creative with, that might even be that they didn't see.
Yeah,
you know, that happens too. So
I try to get in the heads of you coaches a little bit. I just think we're going to see that Utah. It was too effective for Baylor to not see some variation of that. Maybe they don't U-turn on a pin and pull. We only saw that counter reverse once this season. It was a touchdown. It was wide open against another fast flowing team, trigger hard on counter. This is a team that it feels like you get that way. So maybe you don't U-turn a pin and pull. Maybe you U-turn a counter reverse and you hit them that way, misdirection them that way. You mentioned duo. I think we saw it one time maybe this season. But I watched and you watched. You remember the Bears bluffed a duo kick against the Lions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one. Fields pulled it out and ran for a touchdown.
Pulled it out, ran for a touchdown. Al, yeah. It's in the playbook.
Yeah, that. Oh, God, that would be a good one.
It's in the playbook.
I'm going to tell you who ran that one, Sam. I didn't mention this, but Kansas quarterback ran that play. He ran the play against them. The duo read with a bluff play. Mm-hmm. They ran it. I didn't mention that part. Should have.
Yeah. And my last one is a play action. I mentioned this earlier. Somebody asked who's your guy other than JJ or Donovan, Colston Loveland.
Mm-hmm.
A play action shot or two to Colston Loveland. I mean, number 28, their safety sniff run so hard that it just feels like there's going to be a shot play, whether it be a seam or a wheel, there's going to be an opportunity for your tight end. He is their best downfield threat at tight end, and I think we're going to see him go 3 for 3 in the last three games with a downfield shot that he hauls in for a touchdown.
Oh, they're going to try it. it may not, but you're going to see it. I mean, they're not stupid. They know what they got, and they know what that guy's produced of late. So I think you got to feed a hot hand, and I think he is a hot hand. And he's a guy that may catch 4 or 5 passes in this game. Who knows? You know, so I like him, and I think he fits their personnel. He's going to be on the field in a lot of groupings where he's not catching passes, right? So naturally, they're going to think when big bodies come out there, there's a hell of a lot more chance of a run than a pass, and that's when they become vulnerable.
All right. Hey, so, you know, it's fun. I haven't seen many Buckeyes in as many as I was seeing before the game. So hopefully there's some Buckeyes to come back with some energy, provided they beat Georgia, which I want your opinion on that on the way out. Al, and then same thing with Greg Lacy, big TCU fan. He's all over the comments, talk about we aren't giving TCU respect. We gave him plenty of respect. Gave Max Duggan plenty of respect. I just happen to think they're going to get beat. If they do, come back with the same energy, Greg. Come back with the same energy. Because if Michigan loses, we'll come back. We talk about it. We're here win, lose, or draw. So just if they win, if Michigan wins, come back. I want to see this same thing. So Al, two on the way out. Winner and score. excuse me, winner and score of Michigan TCU. And then how do you see Ohio State Georgia playing out?
Michigan, I'm going to pick Michigan to beat TCU 35-21, right in there, I would say. 35-21. And I'm pulling that out of my butt, but I'd say that's reasonable. I think they can get 35 points on them, and I think they can hold them to 21. If they can, again, minimize the damage in their passing game more than anything. I have been sneaking in looks at Georgia. I admit it, okay? I have been looking more at Georgia's offense than their defense, okay? Georgia is one of those teams that they're like Michigan. They make you defend more gaps. They play with a lot of tight ends. And Ohio State didn't handle that real well, okay? And Georgia's very talented, very talented. They got a couple of big, huge tight end that's bigger than a house, and they got one that's a great athlete. I just think with their quarterback playing the way the quarterback's been playing, their experience being a national champion, I think that Ohio State will get about the 24 points on them, you know. But I think Georgia will score over 40 points on Ohio State. I would predict, I don't know, 41-27. How's that? That sound good? 28. 28 is a better word. 41-28. And I'm not sure they can get 28 on them because their defense is pretty damn good. But I have not looked as much at Georgia's defense as I will if we get into that game, and as much as I have in the past. I've been looking at their offense, but that'll be interesting. All right. I'm anxious to watch, Sam.
Yeah, we gave you guys overtime. We gave you plenty of overtime. So that's your full-scale preview. You got the offensive breakdown now to go along with the defensive breakdown. I think you have the most accurate preview of this game that can be found anywhere. I challenge you to find expertise that's going over all the opponents' games the way that Al Borges and Vance Bedford have. So we'll be back next week to break down the X's and O's with telestrations, the film study. You know how we do it.
Monday the bitter morning. And the sweet, Sam. The bitter and the sweet.
Monday morning quarterback coming back next week as well. You know, Devin will be ready to break it down. So, folks, if you like these videos, if you like this series, be sure to like the actual video on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to the channel so you get a notification every time we put up a new video. If you're listening to this on the podcast page, like and subscribe over there. Tell all your friends about it and get it on Google, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, you name it. And then tell them about the MichiganInsider.com. The great deal that's going on right now, 50% off an annual subscription, only a little while longer. And just as we head into another hot recruiting period, two big-time prospects, of course, Nick Harbor being the biggest one. The Wolverines are still in play for. You got wall-to-wall playoff coverage. You got the you got the championship game, provided Michigan makes it there. You got winter recruiting into spring ball, the whole nine. 50% off an annual subscription right now over on the MichiganInsider.com. Be sure to check it out. Until next time, folks, thanks for watching another edition of the Michigan Football Breakdown preview style looking at TCU. We'll see you next week.
Go Blue!
It was a very bright, shining light, Sarajevo, and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.